Good morning. I'm here today to talk to you about joy from Isaiah 51. So I'm going to share my screen and we'll begin. So the title of the talk is A Joyful Longing. A wee bit of context about Isaiah is a game of two halves. The first 40 chapters are really about the fact that Israel hasn't been doing what it should have been doing. It's in exile. They're not where they want to be. And there's a lot of bad news about judgment because of what they've been doing. But then the second half of Isaiah is very hopeful and positive. And it's good news that God is going to rescue Israel. And he's going to do that by a human servant who's going to set things right and bring peace, who we now understand to be Jesus. So we're in the happy side of the book, really. And I would encourage you to read for yourselves Isaiah 40 to 60. It doesn't take long to flick through. And there's a lot of great imagery there and a lot of hope and joy to be found without a lot of hard work. So just to talk about context, first of all, there's Ben Lomond there, as seen from the Kilpatrick Hills, and then Loch Lomond from the same place. And I spend a lot of time up in those hills and in the campsies. I find that going up there gives me a sense of perspective and peace and rest, and find myself strengthened when I come back to face the world. And one of the interesting things about the hills is I can see them from my bedroom window when I'm lying in bed. You can see between my neighbour's two houses there. There's campsies. And sometimes if I'm having a busy week, I'll look to the hills and I'll remember that they're available and I'll be back there soon enough. And it provides a bit of context to whatever is going on that day. So I kind of wanted to look at the context of our joy, or the context of this passage. The context really is Jesus. He is a servant who's going to put things right. And he's the kind of, you know, the lens from which everything in the world that we see should be framed. And so just, you could pick any verses from Isaiah 40 to 60, but I just picked out a few that show us what Jesus is like. He's on our side, Isaiah 42:3. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smouldering wick he will not snuff out. You can see here I've got a bruised sunflower. It's stuck together with some Gorilla tape. I'll tell you later in the summer if that worked or not. But the point is, when we read the word bruised, we think it's maybe like a superficial injury. But I believe the word in Isaiah really meant kind of snapped and fundamentally broken. So we have a servant, Jesus, who's, no matter how broken we are or the world that we inhabit is, he's on our side and committed to not break us, but to restore us, which is great news. And just on that commitment one, so Isaiah 49:15, can a mother forget the baby at her breast? I have engraved you into the palm of my hands. So that's my hands there. And again, the word for engraved maybe sounds like kind of nice Hema art, you know, easy thing. But I believe the word used in Isaiah was a bit more brutal than that. It was almost like having your name tattooed into the palm of his hands. That's how much God is committed to us. So I guess the context of the passage we're looking at today is one of really great news that God is 100% in love with us and committed to being with us and sorting us out wherever we may find ourselves, which I guess is a very joyful thing. Again, in Isaiah, before the verses we're reading today, sing for joy, you heavens, burst into song, you mountains, for the Lord has redeemed Jacob. It's really great that we have Jesus, and it should constantly bring us joy. It reminded me of those verses in 1 Peter 1:8. Though you have not seen him, you love him, and though you do not see him, now you are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. sometimes we can miss the forest for the trees or whatever, but the context of our Christian life is this great joy in who Jesus is and what he's done for us. So that's context. And I really just want to say three things today. I want to talk about joy as a gift, the idea of longing and anticipating joy, and then having joy in community. So first of all, joy is a gift. Going to Isaiah 51 now. Look to the rock from which you were cut and to the quarry from which you were hewn. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who gave you birth. When I called him, he was only one man, and I blessed him and made him many. The Lord will surely comfort Zion and will look with compassion on all her ruins. He'll make her deserts like Eden, her wastelands like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing. So I was kind of thinking of the imagery used there of Abraham and Sarah, who of course had a baby when they were very old, and they'd been promised to be the fathers of many nations, and it wasn't happening. And, you know, we read in Romans that Abraham had faith to fact his body was as good as dead, but kept looking to God in faith anyway. And I guess this was a gift that they were given. They were given the gift of this joyful birth, not because of anything that they'd done, but because God was good. And I was just thinking about that imagery a bit more. In our garage this year, we've had the joy of having little baby blackbirds nesting. And Robbie, my son, managed to get a good picture of them. And this is pretty much how they spent most of their days, just with their beaks up, open, waiting for the gift of a nice worm that their mum and dad seemed to spend all day fetching for them. And again, nothing that these helpless chicks are doing. It's a gift, literally, from above. So I was thinking about Abraham and Sarah and their faith and thinking about these births. And I was just thinking about my own posture in life. And am I looking to God? Do I believe that there is joy to be had in God and in his presence? And am I putting myself in a place where I can receive his presence and his joy? And that was a real challenge to me, as I thought, you know, joy is a gift, but it's one that we need to open up our beaks and put ourselves in a position to receive. And kind of related to that, that fact, I was just thinking of that psalm when it says, in his presence is fullness of joy. Over the last few weeks, we've had the pleasure of having COVID in our house, which maybe didn't bring us much joy. You can see a picture in the middle there of me and Struan just post-diagnosis, feeling sorry for ourselves. So not something I would recommend getting unless you're into that sort of thing. But one thing me and Joanna were talking about was how much better it was to have it with the kids around, because each individual one of them throughout the days, we'd interact with them, and there'd be great joy just in having their presence with us and all their individual personalities. And it got me thinking again of, you know, Jesus, and do I seek to be in his presence and have the joy which he surely brings much more than children or anything else? So again, I was thinking about posture, about looking to God to receive joy, and also about presence, about seeking to be not just getting on with busy life on my own, but seeking to have Jesus's presence in my life and have that joy. And a kind of quote I read, which kind of sums up a bit of that, just the fact that Jesus does turn up with joy, was from Frederick Buchner. And it says this: happiness turns up more or less where you'd expect it to. A good marriage, a rewarding job, a pleasant vacation. Joy, on the other hand, is as notoriously unpredictable as the one who bequeaths it. And again, Romans 15, 13. May the God of all hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him. So I guess a challenge not to repeat myself for myself and for us, is to seek to be in Jesus' presence and to seek the gift of joy which he can bring. So that was gift. The other thing I was thinking about was longing. So reading on in the passage, listen to me, my people, hear me, my nation. Instruction will go out from me. My justice will become a light to nations. My righteousness draws near speedily. My salvation is on the way, and my arm will bring justice to the nations. The islands will look to me and wait in hope for my arm. Lift your eyes to heavens, look at the earth beneath. The heavens will vanish like smoke, the earth will wear out like a garment, and its inhabitants die like flies. But my salvation will last forever. My righteousness will never fail. So I was reading a wee bit about righteousness and justice and salvation in the Bible, and particularly in the second half of Isaiah. And the words that people were using about it were the sense of absolute well-being. That picture of a bee asleep in a flower was the closest thing to absolute well-being I could find a picture of. It's the idea that everything that can be sorted will be sorted, and an end to wrath, and an entrance by faith into divine comfort, strength, and joy. So these are what these kind of big words are pointing to in terms of Isaiah, this idea of absolute well-being and joy. But of course, we know that the world isn't a place of well-being and absolute joy. It's a difficult place. Life happens. And I've heard quotes like this over the last few months, that things will never be the same due to situations that have come up, or people saying, I'm not the same person that I was, or I have ruined everything. That feeling that we've broken something and we can't fix it, or the idea that we won't be able to move on until something else kind of happens. And I can relate to some of these feelings. And joy can seem a long way away in some of these emotions that we feel. I do like the road to Emmaus, where the resurrected Jesus surprises his disciples who are so despondent. And they had said that they'd hoped he was the one to redeem Israel, and they were just so disappointed. And he unexpectedly opened their eyes and gave them joy. I love that image. And I think there's something in there for us. So I don't know if you can see in this picture on the right, underneath the bird feeders, you can see a little cat. And it seems to spend a lot of time underneath these bird feeders, looking longingly at the birds and anticipating eating them, which you won't be able to do because you've got a bell on. But it's almost like this sort of anticipation of catching a bird gives this wee cat lots of joy. And I kind of feel it's the same with us. We know that Jesus will, in time, make everything right. He's proved that in the resurrection. But in the meantime, when things aren't okay, we can still have that joyful anticipation. And perhaps our posture, like with the birds earlier when we had open beaks wanting to receive the gift of joy, perhaps our posture should also be a bit like a cat that's just on alert and anticipating the joy that's to come. So that was longing. We've done gifts, we've done longing. And the final thing I wanted to talk about was community. Reading on again, was it not you who dried up the sea, the waters of the great deep, who made a road in the depths of the sea so that the redeemed might cross over? Those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. So that whole talk of entering Zion was singing kind of reminded me of the Psalms of Ascent, which speak of the fact that the Israelites, when they joined their festivals, used to sing these songs as they climbed up towards Jerusalem. So those verses in Isaiah, I'm sure, would have, for those people in exile, would have reminded them of the community and of the joy that they had in their community. And it reminded me that joy isn't a solitary thing. It's not something that we just experience on our own. It's also a community thing, a bit like when you see a football match and you see the footballers, the fans celebrate together. There's something about celebrating with your friends which is different from celebrating on your couch on your own. And I was just thinking about joy in terms of community, in terms of the church, because I'm sure many of us will agree it's been difficult times not being able to meet together due to COVID. And you know, the fact that we're a scattered congregation from many different locales, maybe all feeling a bit zoomed out. And even when we try and meet in person, that's a lot of work and tricky for those involved in making that happen, but also can be tricky for those who aren't in the building. It's just not been easy for anyone, is what I'm trying to say. And I guess our young people, who have been served really well by their youth leaders, as we saw last week, they've still missed out on a lot of things, as of some of our older people who, many of whom have been much more lonely than they would have been. So it's been a real tricky time for the church, and it's, you know, choppy waters going forward as to how we, you know, keep this robust community that we've got together. But one thing I was wondering about is, how can we bring joy to each other as we try and reconnect after the pandemic, as hopefully restrictions ease and we can get back together again? How can we bring each other joy? And again, you can see I spent a long time in my garden. So we've got this sweet pea climbing up a fence, and you can see that it's got a little hand sticking out that sticks to the fence. And it's just taking the next step as it climbs up. So I was wondering, what is the next step we could take as individuals in the communication, in the congregation, to encourage each other and to bring joy? And I read this quote again by Frederick Buchner: vocation is where your greatest joy meets the world's greatest need. So is there something that we have in our gift to bring joy to some of the other people in church in terms of reconnecting with them and helping us celebrate as a community? That was a thought to leave on. So thank you for listening. That ends my thoughts on joy there. So I'll stop there, and I hope you have a joyful day and a joyful week.